I might ask a question, John.
Yeah.
Something that we all can relate to, which is the area of financial services.
Yep.
The banks have done an awful lot of work on this area of customer analytics, understanding customer behavior. Why is it still that it's such a challenge for the banks in getting it right here?
I don't know. We'll have to ask the banks about that. My perception is that, in the banks that we've relied on technology, we relied on CRM systems and things of that nature. We've got a lot of data, but we still don't understand the fact that we've really only got three or four types of buyer behaviour for our particular different products and services. And I think even if we did know, I don't think the banks are not the only ones here. We seem to have an inability to translate the information that we have at the front end to the back of office staff and other people who work inside the organisation. What I'm suggesting is that there is a way of coding up our customers, because, you know, the interesting thing for me is that customer behaviour and buyer behaviour isn't random. There are patterns and it is manageable. We're trying to take, I think, a too extreme, sophisticated point of view rather than a more simple point of view and breaking our customer base up into three or four types of buying behaviour, just like Foster's did. Now, I tried to tell them that 10 years ago, but you're never a prophet in your own country. And then a couple of years ago, they fell across the book written by the two French professors, Blue Ocean Strategy. And that was the sort of thing they were saying. Particularly, it was relevant to Foster's then because they were moving into wines and spirits. They got them out here, and they came up with that, which is the right way to go. No question about that. The longer we just institutionalise the definitions of our customers, the longer we will not be able to actually align with our customers, because those sort of definitions are fine for standard industry classification and data collecting, but they've got nothing to do with customers. And we've got to get rid of institutional definitions and look for behavioural definitions. And that's the main message I'm saying. And jig our organisation appropriately. I think the banks have done a lot of process re-engineering, but you'd have to wonder, you know, against what target.
How are you going? Craig Wolford from Citigroup here. Yes, just sir. The supermarket retailing in Australia is definitely an active area of supply chain change.
Yep.
Two areas. Firstly, do you think the supermarket retailers are heading down the right path? And would you say that in 5 years' time that Australian supermarket retailers will be at world's best practice or comparable with some of the best retailers around the world?
Okay. Bit of a loaded question, but... Look, I think those of you who can remember back 20 years ago when Coles were leading Woolworths and Woolworths was terrible, and back in the days of Tony Harding and poor leadership and everything else, and the last days of Sir Theo Kelly and all that stuff, and how things have completely reversed. And a lot of it's been to do with the sort of leadership that Woolworths have had, you know, very good leadership in the last 10 or 15 years. Roger Corbett has played a very cunning game. He's been quoted as saying saying things like, "I don't want my buyers to get too close to their suppliers," but behind the scenes they're working very closely with half a dozen of their suppliers. So he's playing a dual game. For 5,500 suppliers, he's working very adversarial. I'll screw you as much as I can. For the other 10 or 15 that make really 60% of his business, he is collaborating like mad, and that's a very cunning way to do it. And that's what you've got to do. You've got to play that dual game. My only question mark over what Woolworths are doing is really, do they think they can do it all on their own? You know, I think it takes time to build those sort of capabilities inside the business, and sometimes you've got to leapfrog by bringing in capabilities. And, yeah, they've done that. They've followed Walmart very closely. They've brought in people. And Coles have done the same. Coles have observed very closely what Tesco have done, which is just an amazing outfit over the last 20 years, the way they've transformed themselves from being at the low end of the pile to absolutely world-class performers around the world. And a lot of the two Australian retailers we have have both been observing and having different relationships with both of those sorts of retailers. So on balance, I think Australian retailing I still find pretty boring, but in terms of their supply chain, you know, they look to be, they're going in different directions, they're doing it differently, but they're both getting there. I think the problem with Coles has always been, you know, the different sorts of businesses that didn't deliver the synergies that was promised, you know, to the financial world in the early days. But as they get rid of the department store and sort out that, they will, I think, catch up again in the supermarket area. And I think they're both going in pretty much in the same direction, but doing it differently. Yeah. I mean, there's no mysteries about this stuff. It's just a matter of, you know, having the bandwidth to get your head across all the way from the marketplace through to the culture inside the business. And that's been the bit that I think a lot of our companies, and not just Australian companies, but a lot of companies around the world have struggled with, because we've been so deeply ingrained in our functional specialties that we found it difficult to do this mixing and matching. Do you think it's... What about... can I ask a question? What about the Smith family? I mean, does any of this sort of stuff make sense? Or, you know, can you see how you can have your different supply chains, how... If you understood better, I mean, I understand the Smith family a little bit, and you've got an amazing supply chain problem because you've got all these sort of inbound sort of products and services, and then you've got to work them and sort them out, and then you've got all these different sorts of customer groups who are looking for money and support and materials. And again, if you did the same thing and sorted out and understood using the sort of things I talked about today, you would be able to clarify some of your internal complexities. Does that make sense? I mean... But you can't do it just looking at transport or looking at warehousing. You've got to look at it as a whole of business. It's almost an ecosystem in its own right. That's what I'm really arguing, that the supply chain, the way I define it, is a sort of living ecosystem inside the business that we must bring people into a multidisciplinary teams, and when those tasks are finished, we can get rid of them and, you know, form new teams.
Kathy Bray is my name. We find that within the Smith family we have a very distinctive social and commercial set of activities. Mm. And certainly that the demands in terms of supply chain is actually very similar in both. It's just that the customer's buying behaviour is radically different, and I think the challenge for us is that re-engineering backwards. I think in our commercial business, it's actually a little bit more straightforward, to be honest. But yes, in the social side, where our customers are actually community stakeholders, we don't tend to call them customers. They are community stakeholders who we just do whatever they need us to do for them, versus a commercial customer where you tend to have that negotiation. From a very personal perspective, today's resonated for me, and I certainly think in our commercial activities we will have opportunities to particularly match up the idea of your customers' needs with your internal culture before you start trying to reverse engineer anything. Understand yourself first and then have a look at things, yes.
Yeah, thank you for that comment. No, I mean, you might find some interesting stuff around what the United Nations are doing for their humanitarian, although the problem the United Nations... have is that on the one hand they're expected to move very fast, but they've got bickering groups of people up higher who can't make up their minds what they should do and which parties should get involved, and very often everyone gets in everyone's road, as we saw even in Katrina with the Katrina hurricane thing. But now, I mean, just as a final comment here, I mean, this is a very Australian example. I won't say the name of the company, but it'll become pretty obvious. Recently, I talked to a chief executive of an Australian company that is one of the unique companies in the world that has a 70% market share in its category. And this company, was having difficulty in the marketplace delivering. It's a growing company. It's got new product. It's high tech. And the chief executive thought he had a manufacturing problem. And when we had a look at that, we realised that, yes, they were fiddling around in manufacturing, worrying about lean processes and all that. But the real problem was that they weren't getting the product out to the marketplace because, you know, they hadn't built enough capacity. They had two or three key suppliers who were giving them very slow, response for their orders, for accessories and things of that nature, and the whole thing wasn't coming together. And the answer was very simple. You know, lean is fine, but not just at the moment. While you're in a growing market for a new product, high tech, you know, let's throw a bit of money at it, build some capacity, build some of your suppliers up, develop them, don't screw them, find a few other key suppliers, and then use fast transport and other means to get to your global markets. In other words, spend a buck to make a buck when you're in a growing... So I find a lot of people around today whose one-dimensional approach to logistics and supply chain is, that's just a source of cost saving, I'm going to screw anything that moves in there. And it's just a one-dimensional view of the world. It's so much you can do to satisfy customers by just sorting out who deserves a bigger effort and who deserves a lesser effort, and trying to reallocate the resources. Because I leave you with this one thought: you know, I still think we're over-servicing a lot of our customers and under-servicing a lot, and the trouble is we don't know which is which.